Hello and welcome to episode 21 of the Book Wars podcast. I'm Chris and I'm here with Kate and Kristen. Today we are continuing our journey into Battlefront 2 Inferno Squad by Christy Golden. We are talking about chapters 9 through 19. If you missed our first episode, episode 20, go download it right now. Listen to it on bookwarspod.com.
Yay!
I don't even know how to follow that up.
Yeah.
Disembodied yay.
Disembodied yay. Anyway, before we dive in, what are y'all drinking? Kristen?
I have several beverages today. I'm drinking a green LaCroix that I just opened. I'm drinking a fuckload of herbal mint tea. And I am drinking, I'm going to read the wine bottle, but this one's Austrian, so this is in German. It's a rosé. Again, I'm drinking rosé. And I tried to practice this earlier. Niederösterreich, which I think just means dry rosé, probably, if I were to guess, because it just says dry rosé on the back. It's actually really lovely. nice and light and crisp. But yeah, for once, I'm not drinking wine from the Pacific Northwest, twisty.
Nice. We have a very diverse array of drinks tonight.
We do. I'm drinking more Sunset Hills gin, which I mentioned last time is from a Virginia distillery.
I didn't realize that's Bowman
distillery. It's what?
They do whiskey too.
Oh yeah, no, they have it at the liquor store.
We should go. They're near us.
Cool. Well, okay, so I can say it's local.
Kristen, come when you're
Let's
here
go.
Next week.
So soon.
I just drunk a lot of this bottle because I'm clearly slowly trying to become an alcoholic. But whatever.
No,
anyway, Chris,
Oh my god, it would like be impossible for you.
I have really interesting beer this time. I am drinking an Orange Dream Cream Ale from Otter Creek Brewing Company.
Where's Otter Creek at?
It's delicious. It's apparently in Vermont.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's why it sounds familiar, but I didn't want to be a crazy person and say that sounds familiar.
You didn't
want to
be that person? That's my favorite Vermont cream ale.
No, but I have heard of Otter Creek, and I've gotten it before, which, because my family used to go up to Vermont. It was the only thing that we used to play nice with each other when we would go up to Vermont and go to the liquor store. So
nice. What beer would you
Yeah, get? So... Yeah, and Long Trail are like two of my favorite, but I just didn't want to forget that was true because I haven't been up to Vermont in like 10 years.
Sure.
Fair.
Oh, it's fine. It's all good. Now I get to do whatever I want. Now I'm an adult and I get to do whatever I want. And if I want to go to Vermont, I can by myself. It's great.
There you go.
You know who's an adult and does get to do what she wants?
Yeah, I know. For those who perhaps missed episode 1 and our talk of just consistent daddy issues in Star Wars, we're talking about Iden Versio, the captain of Inferno Squad and daughter of Admiral Garrick Versio of the
Naval? ISB.
Thank you.
What's her mom's name?
Zihe.
Okay, great. Just want everybody to know that the...
I don't know how...
Yeah, let's go Z, hey? That's easiest to say.
I don't know what y'all are saying it as, but...
Yeah, Christy Golden, if you're listening, tell us how to pronounce it.
Right.
I want all the podcast listeners to know that item A under institutional versus family loyalty on our outline said, Iden's mother hates her now. So we're really just...
A very professional and detailed outline.
Yes, no, we're diving right in. But no, it's... So, like, one of the things that we wanted to talk about was, like, in this book, obviously, you have this weird family dynamic with the Versios and with, like, kind of within the Dreamers. I think they, like, kind of see themselves as a family. But you also see this, like, kind of conflicting, in some cases, loyalty. Because one of the big themes here is, like, loyalty, whether it's loyalty to the Empire or loyalty to the Rebellion and the Dreamers. Like, we do see a lot of loyalty themes and... Iden prides herself on being really loyal, and the Dreamers do too in their own way. But then, like, you kind of see this building to, like, what happens when, like, being loyal to your family goes against being loyal to your Empire. And, like, as Kristen so greatly pointed out, Like, Aiden's mother, we find out, basically hates her now, and is like, I can't believe you betrayed me, and I will never forgive you for this.
Just to be clear, for those of you who are reading along with us, it's not like Aiden's dad would have reacted, which would have just been like, you are dead to me, which is kind of, I think, how Chris explained it, but it's so much more, like, kind of nuanced than that.
Right.
Like, I mean, she makes it clear, I think, at the end of her hollow that, like, yes, she's kind of disowning Aiden, like, really is disowning Aiden, but at the same time, it's like, she's, like, a hot mess. She's, like, talking about how, like, she loves her and all of this stuff, but then, like, at the end, she's definitely like, but I am so mad at you and disappointed. I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed.
Right. You did a bad thing, and I don't want to see your face.
Sorry, Chris, not to totally just, like, not to just totally say, no, you're wrong. I just feel like it was a lot more nuanced than maybe how you initially. I'm just giving her the benefit of the doubt.
That's very fair. I do feel like there was a lot of, like, I don't remember the exact line, and I won't be able to find it if I just flip through the book now, but it's something along the lines of, like, I don't hate you, but I will never be able to forgive you, or, like, I will never be able to... Okay, do you remember the
keep
line?
Keep talking, I'll find it.
It's just, like, I'll never be able to, like, forget that you did this or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. She's, like, she will, like, forgive her because it's her daughter and she loves her and Aiden's her only child, but, like, she's never, ever, ever going to let Aiden forget that she's not going to forget, sort of thing.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And, like, we have this... Like, and obviously this is kind of a manufactured tension, obviously. Zihei doesn't know it, but Aiden knows that, you know, Aiden's goal at least is to expose the dreamers, get rid of their intelligence leak, and then be welcomed back into the Empire with open arms, which I think we can talk a little bit later about whether or not
as
that's
a hero.
Realistic. As a hero.
As a
yes.
hero. Like, she like, when they take her back to Vardos and she gets off the transport, all these people are there to heckle her and boo her because they think she's a traitor to the Empire, and of course Vardos is a very strong Imperial planet, and she's just like, all you people will be lining up for my victory parade pretty soon, sort of thing.
Yeah, and like, let's...
Which is super interesting.
No, go, Kristen.
No, that's... My point was literally that it's interesting, which is not a point, so you go, Chris.
Oh, I thought you said bitches.
Bitches.
Also bitches.
Anyway.
No,
never not bitches.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because one thing that really struck me, you know, not having read past chapter 19 at this point, is it seems very unrealistic to me that Aiden is going to be publicly vindicated here.
No, absolutely not. I mean, the whole point of her and her team is that they're undercover, right? That...
Yeah, like, they would essentially be burning her.
Right, exactly, and she's an asset, is she not? So, yeah, no. Her entire value is that she's, at this point, is that she's a known face and she's famous and her family's famous and.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm sure they'll, like, within the military so that she can continue serving. And obviously, since she's the main character of the upcoming Battlefront 2 video game, we know that she is, you know, highly regarded within the Imperial Navy still. But it seems very unlikely that there would be anything even remotely close to some sort of, like, parade welcoming her back. Like, it at best, I think, the best thing that she could expect would be to kind of lay low for a while and then slip back into Imperial service once everybody's forgotten her.
Right, like, no cookies, just... Maybe you just very quietly get a promotion at some point, and then that's, like, it.
Yeah, I found the line, by the way.
Ooh, thanks.
I tried to look for it on my computer, and I was like, I'm running, like, 15 things. Why would I not just look for it on my phone? I don't know. I'm tired. I think this is what Chris was... I assume this is what Chris was talking about. I'll just kind of read what I think is correct. Baby, I want you to know that whatever happens, I'll always love you. You're my daughter, Aiden. You'll always be my daughter, and I'll always be your mother. Whatever you do, whatever you say, I can't ever not love you. But... I have lost my respect for you. I am shocked, disillusioned, and Aiden, you didn't just betray the Empire or the Emperor. You betrayed your father. You betrayed me. And I'm not sure if I can ever forgive you for that.
Yep.
There it is. Thank you.
We have this, like, rubbing up against institutional versus family loyalty. And, like, I feel like it might be a little bit foreshadowing of, like, the Dreamers, like, if they have to go against each other for the good of the cause, for the good of the dream, like, what are they going to do? They seem pretty committed, so I think they're going to do it. But we have these, like, kind of conflicting loyalties that are really at play here in a really interesting way.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we touched on this at least, but I think the most interesting part about the institutional versus family loyalty in Aiden's case is that Aiden feels like she's betraying that by doing what she's doing. And Aiden's mother is kind of trying to play both sides of it. I mean, she clearly comes out on the one side of it, right? But you can tell that she is also struggling with the institutional versus family loyalty.
That's a great point. And also, Aiden's case is fascinating because what do you do when one of your parents, like, is the institution?
Yeah.
Or, like, both of your parents.
What? Yeah, I mean, that's a great point.
If we're talking about the empire as a greater, the greater, you know, institution, quote unquote.
Right, right. I mean,
I think you meant her father as the Inferno Squad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but no, I mean, that's a really great point, Keeks, because, like, we do have her mother as, like, you betrayed me. She kind of did. Her mother is, like, in a very real way, the public face of the empire. Like, because, like, yeah. Totalitarianism is nothing without its propaganda. And she is, like, I can't think of any Nazi artists, so I'm just going to say Goebbels. But, like, she is, like, the voice or the face of imperial government and hegemony. It's interesting.
I think this is just kind of, like, more of a wrap-up point than anything else, but I wanted to just make a point about how I thought it was really cool and an interesting choice to make her mother like an artist like this, because we've never seen anything quite like this, I don't think, in any of the other Star Wars media or books or anything like that. So I thought it was just, I mean, we don't know how much or how little that's going to play into her character as a whole. I mean, this is just the second time we're even hearing about her is in this section that we are talking about now. But I just thought, like, from developing the world and fleshing out our understanding of the Empire and how it functions on, like, a day-to-day basis and making us remember those cogs in the machine, it was a really, like, smart and an interesting detail to put in there.
Right. I mean, like you said, it's a really creative choice on Golden's part because we haven't seen anyone like her, and at the same time, she's a very necessary part of this whole operation. Like Chris said, you can't do this without strong images and all of that. I think the closest character we probably have to her at this point is Sabine going around.
I was just thinking that.
Doing all her rubble.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and coming up with the Firebird and all that. The question I wanted to ask is somewhat related, but also very unrelated because it's me. How much do we think... So when Aiden gets the holo recording of her mom telling her that she's a terrible person, before she turns it on, she has this, like, fleeting hope that her father told her mother that she was undercover and everything was actually cool. And, of course, he didn't. And we're never going to get the answer to this, I'm sure, but I'm always going to be wondering, since her parents are divorced, my parents are divorced, so these are the questions I have, how much of it was him just wanting to spite her and how much of it was, like, necessary? I mean, obviously it was necessary, but at the same time, do you think he was just sitting in his office being like, eh?
I mean, we kind of talked last time. I don't know. My parents aren't divorced. The fuck do I know? But we talked last time about how, what is his name? I keep wanting to say Galen, and that's totally wrong.
Garrick.
Start with a G?
Garrick,
sure. How Garrick kind of ran the family like it was a ship. And I don't know whether or not it's really, like, that petty or overly complicated. I mean, at the same time, it totally could be. But he doesn't seem like he gives one single fuck about the people who are in his life that aren't, right, like, empire related.
Except his tools, I guess. I'm just wondering because Aiden also has a thought to herself when she sees Steven interacting with Nadrine because they're so affectionate, and she's just like, I have literally never seen a couple do any of this before, ever. And I was just like, God damn, you know, like, that's really sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Cage Warriors, too. The Cage Warrior couple.
Right.
The Dreamers, whose names I can't remember.
Oh, gosh.
I remember the son's name.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. But
anyway, so, yeah, I think that's just, like, this this book, and we'll talk a little bit more about like genre and stuff in the wrap up, but it's much more of like kind of a spy thriller than I expected.
Yeah,
I was
gonna say it's definitely a spy caper.
Which is just a fascinating dynamic, and like particularly for use in like the blurring of lines between Imperial and Rebel. Yeah, like it's in a way that we really haven't seen before from Star Wars. You do get this like there is no good and evil in this book. It's all shades of gray.
Totally. And
like,
and
you
know what's
have,
funny?
Like,
sorry, go ahead, Chris, finish your point. Jesus, I'm talking a lot this episode.
No, it's me just being a white man. I'm going to repeat myself 3 more times so that you all really understand my point. Go.
I was just going to say, when I think we, what's the other G name that's one of the brothers, quote
Gideon.
Unquote brothers? Gideon. Okay. So when Gideon is explaining how like he has a big crush on Iden, but like the Empire has taught them like nothing comes before the Empire. It was very like Jedi don't form attachments. Like, I mean, and that's from the last section. It's not even from this section, but I was just like, I wonder if that was intentional or not. And like, it was just really interesting, especially because I don't think the rebels would ever say that, but it's a very like Jedi idea of like no romantic attachments, especially. And the Empire is like, you can have romantic attachments, but nothing is before this. And essentially, like, if you're ambitious, it's going to be to your benefit to not.
Right. It's kind of an interesting twist on the Jedi vows of non-attachment, because the Jedi, I think George Lucas himself describes them as kind of warrior monks, right? Because he drew a lot of Jedi philosophy from Buddhism, and he's Buddhist, and all of that. And then the Empire kind of turns it on its head, and it just reminds you of all those horrible post-apocalyptic novels like 1984 or The Giver, where, you know, everything needs to be perfect, and, you know, like,
yeah,
your clothes are pressed, and you never say anything wrong, and all of this stuff. And even your desires, like, they have to be subsumed for the glory of the Empire. I just keep thinking of all these books where people will literally like take pills, or they have like mandatorily have to get shots or whatever, like suppress their sexual appetites, because that is not useful.
I'm really interested to return to this discussion after we read Lost Stars by Claudia Gray in a few months.
Ooh.
Because that's another great example that we have of relationships and romance within the Imperial setting. And it's We get a little bit more of a glimpse into, like, how that's handled, I guess, than we have so far.
Oh, that book is going to fuck me up. I already know it.
No, it really is. That book is brutal. Like, it's amazing, but it's brutal.
It's going to fuck me up. Anyway.
I'm excited.
One other aspect of Imperial versus Rebel is just that, like, there's a lot, like, obviously, we've talked a lot about perspective and point of view and how, like, it's different for Star Wars to be rooting for the bad guy. And, like, we are like conditioned to want the rebels to win, but narratively we're rooting for Iden and Sane and Gideon and Del. But it's also weird in this because like I don't know who I'm rooting for, because like I know the Empire's evil and I know the rebellion's good, but Staven's also a piece of shit, like, and the Dreamers are avowed terrorists, and like not in the like Freedom Fighter, we talked a lot about this when we talked about Rebel Rising, but not in the Freedom Fighter stage of Saw's career, but literal terrorism. Like, in Usagi levels
suicide
of terrorism. Suicide bombers. Yeah,
right, exactly.
So it's just very interesting.
What are you saying, Chris?
I just lost the point because Kate just called time out to yell at me and Kristen for talking over each other.
Mom has to keep order in the podcast, guys.
Sorry, pod listeners. If you didn't know, we don't do this as a video podcast, because if we did, our internets would both explode.
It's true.
But when we record, I think 2 episodes from now, we'll hopefully be all together. So that'll be a very special edition of the Book Wars pod.
Before we start recording, we're probably already all going to be drunk, so it's going to be a fucking mess.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be amazing.
Can I... So Sela's on here next, and I have kind of like a weird closed-minded view of Stila because I only know her from the Andron arc in Clone Wars. And we'll put those episodes in there, in the description. But, so in there we meet Stila. The rebels decide that Stila is going to be their leader, and then Stila dies. So it's like, you know, she's only in like two episodes or something like that. It's like a very short time that we actually like know her, and then she immediately dies.
It's like four or five episodes, bro.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, yeah, it's still like not a very long time in the grand scheme of things, I guess is my point.
Right. She's no Satine. But anyway.
Sure. So I guess what my thought is, it's really interesting that Saul kept bringing up his sister. So it's not, I guess, that surprising that all these folks who are carrying on Saw's name and cause would also do that. But I guess like she made such an impression even before she became the leader of the cell, that everybody just like really, really knows her. And I guess that just kind of struck me, and I just wanted to see if like I was off base with that, because I'm like, wow, there's a lot of like Stila mentions in here, and I feel like we don't have a lot of backstory or anything for her. So, you know, there's an opportunity for that. I would kill for a Stila early life to teenage book. Please, oh my everyone. God. But
write that book.
I know, she's such a cool character. But I don't know. What did you guys think? Did you just think it was just like, oh my God, for sure. Did you guys just think that that was because we just have this like small little snippet of her and this is their way of expanding that? Or what were your thoughts on that?
I do, Chris can correct me if I'm wrong. I think Clone Wars is the only place where Stila appears while she's alive in the canon. Yeah, Chris is nodding. Okay. So it's really interesting because, well, first of all, I think a lot of the older partisans probably had met Stila at one point or another, just because, you know, judging by how old Saul was when he died, people must have met her. But also, that's the thing about people like Stila, though. You don't, because she's a martyr, she's a symbol, you don't really know anything about her because she's no longer her. She's a symbol of the cause. Like, when she initially died, Saw kept up the fight in her name, and, you know, I don't doubt that he loved her and he really believed that he was doing this in her memory and all that, but at some point, when you think of a person, when you frame a person that way, you can't help but start thinking of them as more of a figure and less of a person, and I think that's an attitude that got passed down to the other partisans and then to the dreamers.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that there's a couple things that are like causing this like very like almost one-dimensional view of Stila as a perfect person. And one is, Kate, exactly as you were saying, is the fact that she's a martyr, and like kind of how throughout history, if people are leaders and they're cut down in their prime, we think better of them. You know, we view Abraham Lincoln as a great liberator, despite the fact that he was horribly racist. We view JFK as this massively inspirational president, despite the fact that not a lot really happened during his administration. Sorry, a lot happened. He didn't do that much. And we see these people be reclaimed by history. And I definitely feel like that's happening in Stila's case. And number two is, I think we need to consider the narrator. You know, we don't know who the mentor is, but he's said that he knows, or that he knew Stila. He said that he knew both Saw and Stila, rather. And we don't know who he is, but it's pretty clear that, like, he seems to have been very close to Stila. And so I think that's something that needs to be taken into account as well.
I just want to make the point that Kate and Chris both know who the mentor is, because there were enough clues for them to figure it out, which means that I should know who the mentor is, but I don't, because I'm bad at putting together clues. But yeah, I mean, I totally agree with both. I'm so bad at names. I'm also bad with a lot of like putting things together. but whatever. But yeah, no, I think that those are totally great points, and I think that is the total other side of the coin from what I'm saying. I'm just kind of taking at face value what Lucasfilm is presenting. And I think that that's why the books are such an important, rich part of the canon and enriching it and expanding it and kind of building the real story, as opposed to just kind of like the timeline.
Absolutely. Yeah, the movies are really the backbone.
Also, JFK was also racist and cheated on his wife all the time. I was like, yes, Chris, nothing really happened. He didn't really do much during his administration, but also don't forget that he is also racist.
Oh my, yes. Okay, thank you. I was like, who's sorry. Racist besides everybody? Anyway.
No, it's interesting everybody. Though, because as we're having this discussion, because like I totally agree that people who only see the movies miss out on like these amazing characters that we see and like getting a lot of backstory on Saw and Steela. And to me, Steela is the hero that is on par with Jyn Erso that we never see in the movies. And like,
ooh,
like because, and honestly, and arguably better than Jyn Erso because she's a founding member of this very influential rebel group and like has been reclaimed by her martyrdom and is seen as this inspirational unifying figure in a way that Saw never was. And there's a lot of heroic overtones that like I think could go into like we could very I would love to read a series about like young Saw and Steela and like Del Rey or Lucasfilm or Disney Hyperion, whoever wants to publish it, let Beth Rivas write the Onderon Chronicles of young Saw and Steela.
Right? Please. Or you know what else would be good? Like just a comics miniseries of Steela and Saw in those little skirmishes in between what we see in the Clone Wars and before they actually get their shit together and like, actually form the Onderon cell.
At Marvel, we're talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
At everyone.
At everyone always. Please make us more stuff.
I know.
We're insatiable.
So hungry for content.
For sure.
That's a great point that I never really thought of, Chris. I keep burping. I'm so sorry.
Who are you, me?
I know, right? What is happening? That's really fascinating because Kristen said we see so little of Steela, and and a lot of what we know about her is what people say about her after the fact. That I've never really framed her that way, but of course that's because she fucking got fraged. So
yeah, like
which
immediately.
I'm still mad about. Yeah, I know.
I'm gonna ask my all.
Fraging.
Yeah, I'm just gonna ask my always question that people might be wondering about since we're talking about Steela's quote young life. How old is she when we meet her? Isn't she like in her early 20s?
No, she's a teenager, I think.
Yeah, like, I was gonna say she's like very young, right?
Yeah, I feel like she's 17 or 18. I think Saw feels like he's 19 or so.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Wait, I'm sorry, Kate. What was that? Fridged? What does that mean?
Dead.
Oh, yes. Well, oh, okay. And it's specifically applied often when characters of color, queer characters, women, or any combination of the above get killed off for the purpose, especially for the purpose of other characters' development.
Got it. Okay. That's what I assumed from context, but I don't know that I've ever heard that term before. So no, you learn something every day.
Yeah, I was literally talking to some people on Twitter about fridging today. So it's
no, it's totally a thing. I just didn't know there was a word
for
it.
Yeah, totally.
Like, I didn't know there was a word for it besides the black eyed ice verse.
Damn!
Just going back to Saw and Steela, one note that I want to talk about, and we talk a little bit about this, as a quick aside, if you've not read Rebel Rising by Beth Rivas, you should absolutely do so. It's about Saw Gerrera and Jyn, but you get a lot of the Saw and Steela interplay and the effect that his death had on her. And
other way around.
And we
thank
also...
You. Sorry, the effect that her death had on his.
Thank you.
Gender pronouns are a concept.
Construct. There you go.
Construct. Jesus Christ.
Guys, we're so tired.
But, so anyway... And you get this in our episodes 1 through 3 when we talk about Rebel Rising. So go back and listen. But you have this view of Saw as an inspirational figure by the time you get to Rebels and particularly Rogue One and now in this book. But the one constant is that he's never as good as Steela. Like, it's always like, oh man, Saw, what an incredible person. but man, if Steela hadn't died. It's just fascinating to me that that is his legacy. And I feel like he'd be, in a way, okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, after in Clone Wars, he gets over the fact that he wasn't the one elected to be the leader of the Onderon cell. He's behind Steela all the way, and he never stops being behind her.
Yeah, and then he immediately has to deal with her dying, which is great. It's really great for his psyche. It really doesn't fuck him up at all.
Oh, no, not even a little bit. Doesn't make him lose his marbles and turn to a terrorist even the slightest bit.
Nope, totally not. Nope.
Anyway.
If you want more terrorist / PTSD talk, listen to every other episode we've done. Sorry.
Yeah, no, honestly, like...
Listen to literally any of our episodes if you want more PTSD talk, because, oh god.
Yeah, that's a running theme in Star Wars. But no, actually, like, if you're enjoying Inferno Squad, you should really go read Rebel Rising after you read Inferno Squad, because A, it's just phenomenal and you should read it. It's a very quick read. But B, it does give so much of this background and this development of this partisan mentality that Saw has instilled in his followers and that they're continuing to follow after his death. So basically, read Rebel Rising, watch Rogue One, reread Inferno Squad is your next few weeks.
Listen to our podcast over and over again.
Exactly. Yeah, listen to our podcast.
All right.
So as we're very big on our asides that are edited out today, and then of course Kristen isn't actually going to edit any of this out, and you're just going to be listening to us talk to each other.
But it depends. They never know until the day it drops.
It's true.
One thing that we didn't mention earlier is we kind of skipped over just the whole dynamic of the Dreamers. We talked a lot about Aiden and her family versus institutional loyalty and the Versios and the Empire as a whole. We didn't really talk about the Dreamers. And, like, to me, I very much see them as a group that love each other, but would also cut each other's throats at a moment's notice if the Dream required it. And Kate, you disagree with that.
They are dysfunctional, but I see you have a note here about when the Dreamers are kind of partying it up and they're dancing and she begins to understand that they literally need to live every minute of their lives to the fullest because they never know when they're going to die. And I don't remember which member of Inferno Squad it was, but one of them, it might be Del or Gideon, who recognized that the Dreamers' missions might actually be even more dangerous than anything the Empire would ever give them. I didn't necessarily read it that way because there is so much cohesion. They're very dysfunctional, obviously, and they have their differences, and they're all very different, and they bring different skill sets and mindsets to their mission. But there's so much cohesion in their almost cynical idealism, and there's a repetition of this theme that you often see among rebel cells, where they refer to each other as a family, and Donna calls the Dreamers her family, and of course you hear that from, for example, Kanan and Hera on Rebels when they're talking about the Ghost Crew.
Of course.
And, you know, I see a lot of that here. I don't... It doesn't feel the same as, for example, Imperials when they find out that there's a traitor in their midst and they will literally kill them in cold blood and not think about it again for a second, because that's kind of what they've been brainwashed to do. I think there's it's a subtle difference here, but there is one, and I think it's important to make that distinction.
I'm gonna be honest, I don't know that I agree with you. I agree with you with the concept of, like, the Ghost Crew and how they think of themselves as a family. I think that the Dreamers specifically are, like, I feel like this is what sets them apart, and this is what makes them such a dangerous and effective terrorist group, is that they have so completely divorced themselves from emotional bonds in the moment versus loyalty going forward over the mission. And I feel like that's what, like, I feel like the whole mentality of being a suicide bomber and going on these runs where not only do you know that you could die, but you know that you probably will die. And, like, that you are intending to die for this cause, and it's just a question of when. And I feel like that's a different, I feel like that's a whole nother level that, like, the ghost crew in Star Wars Rebels and kind of just Mon Mothma and Bail Organa's branch of the rebellion never really got to.
But then how do you explain Saban and Nagreen's relationship?
I kind of just see it as, we're here, like, let's enjoy life while we're here. But, like, it'll be interesting, because I feel like, it definitely feels like it's building to something like this, where, like, the Dreamers need to turn on each other for one reason or another, and, like, seeing what happens there.
I read a little bit ahead, so...
Is shit about to get real?
Oh, first of all, shit's about to get real, but also... I don't want to say things, but it's just like...
Yeah, don't, because
so you know
none of us
so
have read ahead.
You know you're right, and you're just, like, luring me into this trap. I feel like, okay.
I'm not completely right. I had this argument before I read ahead a little bit, and then I was... And then something... You're a little right, I'm a little right, but I don't know.
That's great, because I agree with both of you, and I like being double right.
Kristen was right the whole time.
There you go.
That's right.
Yeah, interesting. I don't know. I'll be very interested to see how this is handled going forward in the book, because I very much do see it as, we're here, we're going to die tomorrow.
So, like, it's bone?
Yeah, basically. Like, very, God, I'm trying to think.
I mean,
almost
that's exactly right.
I mean, that's
it's very,
military and also very almost like, kind of like, I'm just thinking of very militaristic cultures, like almost like Spartan,
like Game
just
of
very
Thrones.
Hedonistic cultures where it's like, yeah, kind of Game of Thrones, where it's just
like,
do you remember exactly what I'm talking about? For the fact that you're going to die.
Yeah. Remember when Tyrion had to go to battle for the first time? No, nobody remembers. It's fine. It doesn't matter. He gets a lady of the evening. A sex worker.
Gotcha.
And says, I want you to fuck me like it's my last night on earth.
Ah, gotcha.
Sorry, I love how I just got squeamish because I felt like that was crude, as if I've never said those words before. Well, not those words. Wow, that's... I'm editing
that
all
word,
of this out.
Yeah.
Or none of this out, because Kate will come and kill me.
A little too much information there, Keeks.
That's not what I meant. I'm very tired.
I wish you could see my face right now, because I want to die.
Yeah, samesies, though.
Anyway.
But yeah.
It's fine.
Anyway, I don't think we're ever going to top that. So that kind of brings us to the end of our discussion on Inferno Squad. But we want to give another plug to hashtag representation matters in Star Wars.
Yes. So as you may remember from our last episode, if you listened to it, we were invited by @SovereignCynic. Hey, we love you. To join a group hoping to do a social media internet campaign to raise awareness about representation or lack thereof in the Star Wars franchise. So that is happening on October 13th, which will be the Friday of the same week that this episode drops. You'll be seeing, hopefully, hashtag representation matters in Star Wars going around on Twitter. People are going to be doing a lot of informational campaigns, focusing on different characters, and just raising awareness about their histories and how interesting they are. And hopefully we can get some of the wonderful people at Lucasfilm Story Group to pay a little bit more attention to them and... you know, people that look like them, you know, put out more content featuring those sorts of people. But aside from that, for our part, we are working on a blog post that will hopefully appear on 11/38 on October 13th, focusing
11/38 the blog, not 11/38 the date, which
yes.
Isn't the date anyway.
Yes, the blog.
Yes.
Which, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know what 11/38 is.
Hey, I didn't know until we started, so I just want to make sure we're covering our bases.
That's true. They are, for those who are unaffiliated, they are a very, I would say, well-known within the Star Wars fandom fan blog about Star Wars and about kind of the more, I don't know, how would you describe it? Like, kind of a very detailed, like, academic look at Star Wars.
Absolutely.
In a really interesting way. They... if you read that blog post we were talking about Star Wars and its relationship with fascism over the years a couple episodes ago, I think back in episode 19, we directed you to a blog post on 1138.
Yes, but they also do fun stuff too. For example, somebody who has never seen the Star Wars, any of the Star Wars movies ever, is watching the prequels first and blogging about that. So check that out.
I missed that.
Yeah, I haven't read it yet, and it's probably just going to make me like start screaming. So
yeah, it's going to make me want to cleanse myself and watch the original trilogy.
Yeah, I know. Like when I need to pick me up, or I just feel angry, I guess I'll just read that. But anyway. We are doing a blog post for 1138, focusing on how there need to be more crossovers. I can't talk. There needs to be more crossover between the films and non-film media in terms of characters, because while we've seen a lot of the film characters cross over into the novels, the comics, video games, there hasn't been a lot of movement in the other direction, and which is unfortunate because there have been significantly larger strides in representation, especially of women of color, in the non-film media. So we're just going to be talking a little bit about that and some of the characters we'd love to see on the big screen. So watch out for that. Watch out for hashtag representation matters in Star Wars. Please join in on the conversation. Please retweet. Please talk to us. Give us feedback. And hopefully you will learn something awesome.
Absolutely. We're super excited about this. It's going to be great.
Yeah. It should be.
I feel like
really
I just
fun.
Like rambled a whole bunch about that because it was super off the cuff. And if I said anything offensive, please come punch me in the face because I'm literally half asleep during this podcast.
You didn't.
I feel like I was
you
like
fine.
Said something like those people or something like that. Which, Jesus. Anyway.
She means herself.
Yeah, exactly. Like
that's the issue.
I am the most Asian. Anyway.
Anyway, so I feel like that's a good place to end it. Or it's not, but we're going to end it anyway. Thank you very much for listening to episode 21 of the Book Wars podcast. Next week, we are going to be finishing up Inferno Squad, reading chapters 20 through the end of the book. So read along with us and join the conversation. Hit us up on Twitter with questions, comments. Encourage Christy Golden to listen to our podcast. Don't actually bother her. That would be rude.
I think she retweeted us today. I think she's into it.
She likes and retweets us. I don't know if she listens, but she's wonderful on Twitter. And
she's so
seems
nice.
Like the loveliest person.
So nice.
But anyway, speaking of Twitter, we are Book Wars Pod on Twitter, on Tumblr, bookwarspod@gmail.com. And also, as of, well, not today because you're listening to this a few days later, but by the time you're listening to this, our Instagram is up and running at Book Wars Pod as well. So hit us up on Insta as well.
Check out our Instagram stories. I've been playing with them.
Oh,
I don't know what they will be when this drops, but I did some just now, which they're not going to be up.
Awesome.
I will try to keep playing with them because I'm a monster.
But they were great and you missed them.
They sure were.
And so that's our show. Our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Joe Butera Designs. For Kate and Kristen, I am Chris. Thank you for listening to the Book Wars podcast, and we will talk to you next week. A few seconds of silence.
No.
Chris and Kristen, if you talk over each other one more fucking time.